All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Robert M. Davis presiding. All the business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Well, good morning. Seems like I was only here yesterday. I'm Judge Davis. To my right is Judge Peach, and to my left is Judge Allen. And this is the first time that the three of us have appeared on the panel together, so we're kind of excited about that. I hope you will be too. We're here today in the matter of Turner against Shulkin, docket number 16-1171. And let me just draw your attention to the briefing order that we issued on September 27th of 2017. We'd like to probably focus our discussion today on those issues raised in that briefing order. Number one, whether the holding in Bell against Derwinski applies in the context of 38 CFR 3.156B and its requirement that new and material evidence be received prior to the expiration of the one-year appeal period. Number two, whether treatment records generated by the VA during the one-year appeal period are considered constructively received by the RO at the time of their creation or some other time thereafter, or whether actual receipt is required. And number three, in accordance with Bell against Derwinski, what level of notice or action by the parties, if any, is necessary for the RO or board to have constructive knowledge that the VA treatment records existed within the one-year time frame for appeal. Would counsel for both parties please note your appearance for the record?
Katie Odom with National Veterans Legal Services Program for the appellant, and with me at counsel table, I have Raymond Kim, also of National Veterans Legal Services Program.
Thank you. Welcome.
I'm Lindsay
Gower,
representing the Secretary, and with me at the
council
table is Edward Cassidy.
Thank you, and welcome. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And each party will have 30 minutes to present your respective arguments. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. We'd like to reserve 7 minutes.
7 minutes. So be it. Thank you. Ms. Odom, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chief Judge Davis, and may it please the court. Mr. Turner has advanced two main arguments in this case. I recognize that the court wants to focus mostly on the questions presented in the supplemental briefing order relating to whether new and material VA treatment records dated within a year of a rating decision or notice of the existence of those records vitiates the finality of a rating decision under 3.156B. And the answer to that question is yes, for two alternative reasons. The first reason has to do with the constructive receipt doctrine discussed in the briefing order, but also because the term received is used in 3.156B applies to the VA in general, not just the Veterans Benefits Administration. The second argument that Mr. Turner has advanced deals with the proper remedy in this case. If the court agrees with us that new and material VA treatment records dated within a year of the rating decision or notice thereof, notice of the records, vitiates the finality of rating decision under 3.156B, the court should reverse the board's finding that the February 2006 rating decision became final. If the court doesn't agree that, if the court does conclude that the 2006 rating decision became final, the court should still reverse the board's finding that new and material evidence has it been received sufficient to reopen the claim under 3.156A? And then,
Ms. Odom, I just want to make sure I understand your remedy request. And if you don't mind going over that again for me, I'd appreciate it. So you would like the court to do what exactly?
We would like the court to conclude that the June 2006 VA treatment records in this case vitiated the finality of the February 2006 rating decision and reversed the board's finding that the February 2006 rating decision became final and remand the claim for adjudication on the merits. Alternatively, if we... Alternatively, if the court disagrees with our argument about 3.156B, our alternative argument is the evidence that came in after the 2006 rating decision is new and material, and therefore the board's finding in this decision on appeal that new and material evidence sufficient to reopen the claim under 3.156A had not been received must be reversed. It's clearly erroneous. And the claim remanded for adjudication on the merits.
So on that point, though, as I understand it, and I'm sure the Secretary can correct me if I'm wrong on this, the Secretary's conceded error on the second argument.
Yes, but the Secretary argues that remand, not reversal, is the appropriate remedy. But in fact, under Shade versus Shinseki and Hill versus McDonald, reversal is the appropriate remedy.
So just sticking with that for a second then, on your second argument, 3.156A, the dispute between you and the Secretary, as far as you're concerned, is we all agree that the board didn't consider whether or not this was new and material evidence. The Secretary would like us to remand so the board can do that, and you are asking us to determine that the evidence is new and material, so we remand for the purpose of adjudication. Is that right?
Sort of. There's one little glitch, which is that we disagree as to why the claim was denied in February 2006. And so our argument is, and I think the record shows, that the regional office denied the claim in February 2006 for two reasons. One, the lack of a current diagnosis or disability of epilepsy, and two, the lack of evidence showing an in-service aggravation of epilepsy. And so putting even just the June 2006 VA treatment records aside, there's this 2010 statement from the private doctor that says, I have been treating Mr. Turner for years for intractable chronic epilepsy. And we argue that that satisfies 3.6A under SHADE because it relates to the previously unestablished element of current disability. The Secretary has defended the board's finding that even though the rating decision noted that there was no evidence of a current treatment or current diagnosis of epilepsy, that wasn't truly a reason for the denial. But as we've explained in our brief, it's just an implausible reading of the record. There were two reasons why the claim was denied: lack of in-service aggravation, lack of current diagnosis. The evidence in 2010 that the board specifically addressed and rejected in this board decision that shows a diagnosis of and treatment for epilepsy satisfies an unestablished element and is therefore new material under SHADE. But you don't need to, the court need not get to that argument if it agrees with us that under 3.156B, the treatment records that talked about a diagnosis of epilepsy being intertwined with PTSD vitiated the finality of the February 2006 rating decision. Because then it's still the June 2005 claim that was the subject of the February 2006 rating decision that's on appeal before the board today. And there are two reasons why the court, on appeal before the court today. And there are two reasons why the court should determine that under 3.156B, the June 2006 treatment records did vitiate the finality. The first is because under 3.156B, the term received means just what it says, received by the VA, any part of the VA, including Veterans Health Administration.
So on that point, and I admit I could be wrong on this, but Did you raise that point in your briefing?
We argued very broadly in the initial brief that under 3.156B, any VA treatment records dated during the one-year period count under 3.156B. And we believe that that covered this argument. Further, in the supplemental briefing, the Secretary argued that received means actual receipt. And if that's true, following the Secretary's logic, here they were actually received by the VA, just not VBA.
Well, I mean, if we want to go down that route of that, right, nothing was received, ever. Right? They were created. Right? I mean, under your interpretation that the VA is an it under 3.156B, right, then no treatment records were ever received by anybody. They were created. And that's a different word, right? So I'm not sure that gets you to where you need to be.
Well, they were received by the VA on the date that they were created by the VA.
How? I mean, that's an odd phrasing of English, wouldn't it? That when a doctor creates a record, he receives it, and he receives it from whom? The doctor who made it to him or herself? Right? I mean, it's an odd linguistic sort of movement here.
Well, we think that the proper interpretation and application of B would mean that the date that its record is created, it's also received by VA. That's the consistent with the veteran-friendly spirit of the regulation and is consistent with the veteran-friendly spirit of the adjudicatory system as a whole. But assuming that the court disagrees with us on that point, we still have the doctrine of constructive possession under Bell versus Drewinsky. And in this case, there are two important events that occurred within the year of the rating decision that triggered the doctrine of constructive possession. The first is that the records were created themselves. And the second is that VA received notice of the existence of these records within a year.
In June of 06 or in July of 06? When did the VA receive notice?
July of 2006.
When Mr. Turner filed a claim for epilepsy, PTSD, and a skin condition.
Well, he not only filed a claim, but he explicitly informed the VA that he was receiving treatment through the VA.
For depression medication.
That's right. But he specifically noted that there was treatment and it was at a particular VA treatment facility. So the VA was on notice then that these records existed. Now, if the VA had timely obtained those records and associated them with the claims file, we probably wouldn't be here. But instead, the VA waited almost a year and a half before getting those records. And so the Secretary would like this court to find that, therefore, they weren't actually in the record, or because they weren't printed out by the VA and put in the claims file until 2007, then they weren't part, they can't be considered under 3.156B.
So let me ask you this. Let's assume that I'm with you on the concept that the word received can include constructive receipt, okay? What test, I mean, assume that you're writing this opinion, what test would you have us write to describe the level of knowledge that the Secretary has to have about the existence of the records?
We believe it's the two-step test under Bell and its progeny, which is they have to be generated by the VA, which clearly they are here, and two, they have to be reasonably expected to be part of the record. The thing about VA treatment records...
What do you mean about the second part? Are you reasonably expected to be part of the record? I mean, so here's the thing I'm struggling with, right? Just so you know, I see this in two chunks. There is existence, right, the existence of something, and then content, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we know prior to the issuance of a decision, at least, the Federal Circuit tells us that the duty to assist in that context doesn't require the VA records to even be relevant. Okay? So I'm not sure whether content ever going to come into play here, but existence does. So what level of information about existence has to be present? Is it just that I'm being treated for some condition? Is that sufficient?
It's even less than that, because VA's own procedures require adjudicators to always check the CAPRI system to see whether there are VA treatment records. And the M21 says this is true even when there is no notice or the veteran doesn't claim to have received any treatment at the VA medical center.
Yeah, but how would that work in that one-year period? Right? Imagine this, right? We have the VA is a busy place. The RO has finished adjudication, and we've put the decision aside. The veteran now has a year to do something. You're not suggesting that the VA adjudicator, having completed work on this matter, would need to check the CAPRI system just every morning for every decision they've ever done. Right, that just seems really unworkable.
So, Your Honor, that's where we would disagree, right? It's not an undue burden to have a tickler in some system that, after a year, gives you an alert to look at the CAPRI screen and see whether there are new records. And, in fact, it's really important to remember that this is a VA-created regulation. This court and the Federal Circuit have talked about that a lot in this line of cases. VA created this particular regulation. It's a veteran-friendly regulation, and VA can't be excused from following that regulation. So if that means that the VA has to look at a CAPRI screen in a year to see if any new records came in, and then make a determination as to whether they're new and material, I would argue that that's not an undue burden. Further, even if this court were to determine that that is not required of the VA, it's still important for this court to hold today in this case that these records are important under 3.156B. And the reason why is this usually comes up, the 3.156B analysis usually comes up when we have a case where we're talking about, like in this case, whether there was a prior final denial and whether 3.156A applies, and also what is the proper effective date. So even assuming VA doesn't have this other duty to look at a CAPRI screen at the end of the year, it's still really important to address this question and to rule that the VA treatment records are constructively before the adjudicator under 3.156B, because it will affect future cases dealing with the finality of prior decisions and effective dates.
Ms. Odom, doesn't that really create a backlog for the VA in processing decisions? I mean, to have a decision pending for an entire year after February 6th and to expect someone at the VA to check the CAPRI system for an entire year thereafter, what does that do for getting cases decided?
Well, it does a lot for getting a veteran's case decided, like Mr. Turner, who had relevant treatment within a year, and VA has constructive knowledge of this. And it does a lot for promoting the goals of 3.156B anyway. Again, VA's own created regulation.
Are you talking about 3.160?
3.156B.
All right, but 6.0 gives you the time frame for
that's right.
Pending cases or cases that would be active until the end of the year.
Right, and that's an important point that Judge Allen just talked about, the fact that VA treatment records under VA's own regulation don't even need to be relevant for the duty to assist to apply to them. And the duty to assist isn't just applicable in one discrete moment. It's a overarching duty without any temporal requirement, and it applies until a claim is finally adjudicated under 3.160, and that doesn't happen until a year after the rating decision. So to excuse the VA from having to comply with its statutory duty to assist is interpreted in its own regulation and its own regulation of 3.156B.
Could I just stop you on that point?
Sure.
Because I am intrigued by the duty to assist point during that 1 year period. What could you point me to if I wanted to be really clear that there's a source of law already that says that the duty to assist continues during that 1 year period? What's the best authority for that?
There's no authority directly on point.
I'm feeling better already, because otherwise one of my law clerks would have gotten in trouble. But continue.
The best authority is the statute and the regulation itself. There's no temporal requirement about when a duty is to assist applies and when it doesn't. And so it follows, obviously, there's no duty to assist in a finally adjudicated claim. So after a year passes and there's no appeal and the decision becomes final, there's no duty to provide a veteran with, say, a VA compensation exam, or arguably even to get VA treatment records when there's no pending claim. But as long as that claim is pending, there's no limits on the duty to assist except for what's in the regulation and the statute. And that
So there's two ways to look at it. There's that way, which is exactly right, which is that until a claim becomes totally final, the duty to assist remains in play, just as you've described it. Now, there's another way that one could look at this, and I don't know which one is better under the law, which is until the NOD is filed, the duty to assist is suspended. And, of course, under current law, once the NOD is filed, then the duty to assist continues after that. Why should we pick one over the other of those two?
Well, there's no authority for the second choice, and I'm not familiar with any precedent from this court or from the Federal Circuit that would support that there's no duty to assist unless a notice of disagreement has been filed. And the best, you know, the duty to assist at its core is a veteran-friendly concept, and part of the 2001 VCAA, which Congress passed for the sake of providing more assistance to veterans. So to come up with a rule without any basis in the statute or the regulation, which would say, except the duty to assist stops at this point, wouldn't be consistent with the spirit of the duty to assist or Congress's intent in passing the VCAA.
Well, I mean, it's not a never-ending duty, is it? I mean, we've heard of the never-ending story, but this is, it's not a never-ending duty. It ends at some point.
Yes, I would agree.
And that point would be exactly when?
For service medical records, once it's clear that they've all been obtained and that additional efforts to obtain them would be futile. Mm-hmm. For private treatment records, when it's clear that additional efforts to obtain the private records that have been identified by the veteran would be futile. But for VA treatment records, it's an ongoing duty. As long as there are additional records out there, it is VA's duty to obtain them as part of the duty to assist. And therefore, they must be considered, must be reasonably expected to be part of the record and satisfy that second prong of Bell.
There was no NOD filed after February 06 in this case, was there?
There wasn't a document filed that was recognized by VA as a notice of disagreement. He seemed to have requested to reopen the claim, and the VA told him that they would not reopen it without new and material evidence. And even though he submitted this statement within that year saying, I have treatment records, this is where you can get them, they didn't get them for another year. And it turned out that those treatment records were new and material with respect to the epilepsy.
Is there any way that the VA should have known about this record that was generated in June of 06, between February of 06, or in February of 06, or after, before June of 06?
Yes, following VA's own procedures, the
Capri?
Yes, the adjudicator should have looked in Capri and seen that there were records available. But that didn't happen here. The only evidence that the regional office considered in adjudicating the claim in the 2006 decision for the service medical records, which were dated 40 years prior to the date, 40 to 50 years prior to the date of the decision.
The notice, let me go back to the statement that the appellant had given notice to the VA that he had these additional records. What does the record reflect on how he did this and when he did this?
He submitted a written statement to to the regional office.
And it said?
It said, I receive treatment for depression at a VA medical center.
And what was the claim before the RO at the time?
The pending claim as
yes.
of 2006
yes.
was, there were two, PTSD and epilepsy.
Okay. And so he submitted a statement saying what now?
I received medication for depression through the mental health clinic at VAMC North Little Rock.
And that was it?
I have not actually been diagnosed with PTSD. There were about three paragraphs. I see my time is about to expire, but may I just finish a thought on that?
Just one second. We might have more questions for you. Would you add 5 minutes to time, please? So, Ms. Odom, you have more time.
Thank you. So, Judge Peach, even though he said, I received treatment for depression, the fact that he said it was at the VA medical center was enough to trigger the VA's duty, to obtain these records under Sullivan 3.159, and therefore satisfies that second part of Bell, which is that it was then reasonably expected that these records would be in the claims file. And you can look to Berard for support for that. In Berard, it wasn't VA treatment records, it was service medical records, but the Federal Circuit in that case said that once that notice came in within that year, that was enough to vitiate the finality under 3.156B, even though in that case the records had not been obtained at all. And so implicit in that holding is the principle that these records are incorporated by reference. Once you give the agency notice that these records exist, if they end up being new and material, they're enough under 3.156B. The notice itself is what gives the VA the notice or the constructive possession of the records.
And so I just want to make sure I think I understand this, but I want to make sure perfectly clear that all that is required under your view to require the VA to do something during that one-year period is to have notice that there is in existence a VA medical record, right?
That is the bare minimum, but we would go further and say just the fact that these records were created is enough under Bell.
I assume I don't buy that. Right, and we're on to the next point, right? And I'm speaking just for myself. Your reading is that because the duty to assist continues in the same way before and after the decision, and because the Federal Circuit said in Sullivan that there's no relevance requirement at all, just existence for VA medical records, that really the content of, in your colloquy with Judge Peach a moment ago, the content of the statement, with the one exception of the fact that records exist, would really be irrelevant in your view. Is that right?
Right, right.
Okay.
Just that the records exist. Now, if he had said, I mean, even the Secretary agrees in the supplemental briefing that if he had said, I get treatment for epilepsy, well, the Secretary doesn't agree that just a current diagnosis would be enough, but if he had said, I get treatment for epilepsy and they've connected it to service, please get my records, we wouldn't be here because they would have accepted that as new and material. We wouldn't be litigating the issue.
Right, but I mean, but the existence point, right, mm-hmm. just so I nail this down, right? Okay, so we know that records exist. Your position is, okay, then the VA must get them
right.
to to bring constructive receipt into physical receipt. But at that point, that just leads them to then make the determination of whether that is now new and material sufficient under the rule.
Exactly.
Okay.
They are received on the date of this notice under the second theory that we've put forth. Then there's a second determination of whether they're new and material. And here there's really no debate. I mean, the Secretary even concedes that they're favorable, it hasn't raised any arguments about whether they're inherently incredible or anything like that. And under Hill versus McDonald, the right remedy in that case is reversal, because there's really no outstanding factual determination to be made.
I do have another one.
Okay.
Going back to that CAPRI system, what is your understanding of that system? How is it accessed? Because you had indicated that, or I thought you had indicated that during the 1 year prior, before the decision, after the RO makes a decision, they should be consulting this CAPRI system occasionally or at the end. I mean, what is your understanding of how they would do it, and what is this CAPRI system? Is it easily accessible?
Counsel, before you answer, could you add 5 more minutes? Go ahead.
There are 2 answers to that question. The first is that EA's official description, as set forth in the M21 of what CAPRI is, quote, an automated information system that provides authorized users read-only access to veterans' medical records created and maintained by Veterans Health Administration facilities. And I can tell you from my own personal experience just looking through RBAs that it's just what I usually see is just a screenshot that'll say something like no records found or something like that. And I would note that in the record, it looks like, and I don't have the site off the top of my head, but after the new claim for epilepsy came in 2010, they did just that. The adjudicator looked at CAPRI and made a note that since there were no additional records dated at after 2007, no records had been printed. So it seems to be a very simple one-step action that doesn't seem to be an undue burden.
So you would propose that VA, as a matter of course, regardless of whether or not there was a, quote, notice that I've been seeking medical attention, that they should just generally, routinely look at CAPRI before they issue a final decision to determine if there is new material evidence?
Yes, but that's not just my position. It's VA's position, too, in its own procedures manual. It says even if the veteran doesn't claim to have any VA treatment records, you should still look in CAPRI to see if there are any.
During that period of time, or just is that a general statement?
It's just a general statement.
Right. So, I mean, I think that's the question, is whether that requirement to continue to look itself is the same before and after the issuance of a decision.
Well, we would argue it is, again, reading 3.159 and 3.160 together. And just for the court's information, the record site where this handwritten note about looking at CAPRI is at page 296.
Could I ask one more question before you sit down? And you may not know it, and so the Secretary's counsel might be the person to ask this to. When you look up in CAPRI, do you actually see the record?
I don't know the answer to this question. I think that my colleague would be in a better position to tell you, but I can tell you from my experience of looking at RBAs, it's just a screenshot that says whether there are records or not. And I think I would speculate that what happens then if there are records, then they're actually printed or integrated into VBMS on the same date or some other date.
Ms. Odom, one other question regarding the M21 and the guidance to for the RO or the VA to perform the enterprise search on Capri. I see guidance in the M21 that involves when the relevant treatment is alleged at a VA facility and when the veteran does not identify treatment at a specific VA facility, but it looks like the requirement, as far as I can tell, to conduct the search is the same.
That's right. That's my understanding as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Gower, we added 10 minutes to appellant's counsel, and if you need that additional time, you may have it as well.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May I please the court? Your Honors, the Secretary would initially like to note that the constructive notice issue here is, in fact, a downstream issue that the court need not address. Appellant even conceded that whether the March 2006 rating decision was final relates only to the question of a potential effective date. Here, the veteran has not been granted service connection for epilepsy, and therefore the court need not reach the question of any potential effective date.
I just want to make sure I understand this, because I also don't remember this in the briefs. Are you saying that we don't need to address constructive notice at all?
Your Honor, yes. Our contention is that the court can simply remand the board's decision for the board to assess whether there is new material evidence with regard to the claim, and then to address, if it finds that there is new material evidence, to address the merits of the claim. The effective date issue does not come into play until and if the veteran is granted service connection.
That seems odd, right? Because we all know the elephant in the room, right? The elephant in the room is whether this is new and material evidence that was received during the one-year period under 3.156B versus is it new and material evidence that was received later, and so the claim might be reopened under A. But that decision is going to be back here no matter what, right?
Potentially, Your Honor, not if he's never granted service connection. It would not come back up to the court.
Well, sure, right, because he's not going to be granted service connection again, and then he's going to appeal again saying 3.156B, right, because that's what he's here for. We all know that's what the appellant wants, right? Now, it's true. It's because of the effective date, which you can describe as a downstream issue. But no matter what the board does on remand, unless it all of a sudden turns around and says, we grant you service connection and we use the reopening under 3.156B, right, unless that happens, which is not going to happen, he's going to be back here because we know that's it. So.
Perhaps, Your Honor. And if the court chooses to address the issue, the Secretary contends that the court should hold that the constructive notice doctrine enunciated in Bell v. Derwinski does not apply to Section 3.156B of Title 38 of the Code.
Let's talk about that, counsel, because you can assume that the court will like to hear more about that. Why doesn't Bell's constructive notice decision apply here?
For three reasons, Your Honor. First, the constructive notice doctrine is not consistent with the plain language of 3.156B. Second, even if the court were to find that the regulatory language is ambiguous, VA's interpretation that 3.156B requires actual receipt is entitled to deference. And third, policy considerations weigh against the expansion of Bell to 3.156B.
Do you mind doing this in reverse order? Let's talk about the policy first.
Sure, Your Honor. So, Your Honor, applying constructive notice to 3.156B could essentially vitiate the finality of a great number of rating decisions. Under Bond, the Federal Circuit's case law in Bond, VA is required to make an assessment when new and material evidence, when evidence is received during the one-year period to determine if that evidence is new and material under 3.156B. So, with that case law, if the court were to find that constructive notice applies in this context, the regional offices would essentially be required to do a second re-adjudication after the one-year period in every case in which a veteran was not granted the full benefits that he claimed and in which the veteran was receiving VA treatment.
Why do you say that's a second re-adjudication? Why wouldn't it be simply a search, as appellant's counsel described, on the Caprice system to make sure there's no additional records? And if there are no additional records, then there wouldn't be any other adjudication.
If there are no additional records, there would not be. But if there are additional records, VA would have to obtain those records and comb through and do a very fact-intensive assessment as to whether the records are new and material. And VA treatment records can oftentimes be voluminous. A veteran may be receiving VA treatment for multiple conditions which may be service-connected or may not be service-connected and which may not be related to the claim on appeal. So this is an onerous burden on the VA to essentially have to do a second re-adjudication after the one-year period in potentially a great number of cases.
So what is the Secretary's position on this question about the duty to assist and Sullivan, for example? Because, you know, I was frankly surprised when the Federal Circuit issued a decision that said that, you know, relevance was irrelevant, so to speak. But that's what they said. And so if the duty to assist continues during that one-year period where we don't know whether an appeal is going to be filed or not, it would seem to me that notice of the existence of the records might be enough to say that policy considerations aside, the VA's got to get the records because it doesn't matter what they are. They could be dental records for all we know under the Federal Circuit.
Your Honor, the Secretary does not concede that the duty to assist applies after an initial adjudication. However, for the sake of argument, if the duty to assist does apply, it is not implicated in this case.
So let me just go back there. That was an excellent lawyerly answer, but does the duty to assist apply in that period?
Your Honor, as appellant noted, it is not necessarily clear.
Good again, but listen to the question, right? Is it the Secretary's position that the duty to assist applies in the period after the issuance of the decision and before submission of an NOD?
We are not conceding that.
Now I'm being quite serious, okay? My job is I'm going to ask you a question that's important to me. I'm not saying does the Secretary concede. I'm asking you to give me the Secretary's position about whether the duty to assist applies in the period after the issuance of a decision by the RO and the submission of an NOD.
Your Honor, I apologize. The question presented to the Secretary was whether a constructive notice applies under 3.156B, and that is the issue that I'm prepared to answer. I would distinguish the application of the...
I'm going to tell you, I'm a relatively new judge. You know that? What you just said is I will not answer the question. Now, if that's actually what you're going to do, you should actually say that. I understand very well what the question is that we posed to you because I wrote it. I'm now asking you a different question, and I'm going to give you one more chance to answer this question. Does the duty to assist apply... Does the duty to assist apply in the period of time after the RO issues a decision and before the submission of an NOD?
Your Honor, it is VA's practice that if a veteran were to identify new evidence that has not been obtained and that would be relevant to why the claim was denied, VA would obtain those records. So, for example, here, if, as stated in the supplemental briefing, if the veteran had submitted a statement saying that he had VA treatment records and that his doctor had stated that his epilepsy had been aggravated by service, that would trigger the duty to go get those records. But that also would be new and material evidence because the submission would be presumed credible based on its face, and that would put VA on notice of potential new and material evidence. So, Your Honor, the 3.156B standard can be the governing standard here.
Okay, let's move on to your second reason for not applying constructive notice, and that is receipt, you mentioned. What's your point there?
Are you just referring to the plain language argument, Your Honor?
Well, I think that's what you're referring
to.
Yes.
So the Secretary contends that the language in 3.156B, the fact that it uses the word received, does not contemplate constructive notice, and this stands in contrast to the language that the court interpreted in Bell, in which that regulation was 7252, which stated that the court's review will be based on the record of proceedings before the Secretary and the Board. And before is a broader term than the word receive. It makes sense that records could be before the adjudicative body and the VA is able to obtain them, but that same concept does not apply with the word received. And as Judge Allen noted when questioning appellant, essentially VHA is creating the records. VA is not receiving these records. It does not make logical sense to say that VA is receiving records from itself. And when...
What do we do with the mailbox rule, right? So you're familiar with that, that, you know, courts will assume that something is received within, for us, 120 days of the board decision, mm-hmm. if it's postmarked. So it really isn't received, but we pretend like it is. Isn't that some evidence that the word received can, in some contexts, be interpreted to mean constructive?
I would disagree that that's necessarily constructive notice, Your Honor. That's simply, in that case, the court or whoever the body is still receiving something from another person. It's that the mailbox rule just affects the date that it is considered to be received. And so, thus, because 3.156B does have a temporal requirement, it makes sense that they would use the language received. When subsection B is read in context with subsection A and with the case law interpreting this, for example, in Bond versus Shinseki, the Federal Circuit has discussed that VA has to make an assessment as to evidence that is submitted by the veteran within 1 year, reading the language in subsection A submitted in context with received in subsection B. So the language of the regulation seems to put the responsibility on the veteran to take some sort of affirmative action and to submit new and material evidence. And the Secretary would draw this court's attention to the case of Voracek versus Nicholson, in which the Federal Circuit addressed a highly similar factual circumstance as here. In Voracek, the veteran had sent in a statement within 1 year of a rating decision requesting an increased rating and referencing that he was receiving VA treatment. And in that case, the Federal Circuit specifically held that it looked to the statement itself and determined whether that statement on its face was new material evidence for the purposes of 3.156B. In Bond versus Shinseki in footnote 4, the Federal Circuit reiterated that the inquiry in Voracek had been whether the statement by itself was new material. So the Secretary would contend that that case is factually similar and it should govern here. Appellant cites Bayrod, however, that case can be factually distinguished. In that case, the appellant within a year identified the location of service treatment records that had not been obtained prior to the initial adjudication. And in his case, his claim had been denied based on a lack of an in-service injury. So the service records would necessarily go to an unestablished fact that was the in-service injury. Whereas here, the veteran did not identify that he was receiving VA treatment for epilepsy. Rather, he identified that he was receiving VA treatment for a separate incident condition, and VA had no notice that those VA treatment records would be relevant to his epilepsy claim.
So if we were to write an opinion that adopts the Secretary's position sort of across the board on this point, how do we deal with what could be understood by normal people to be a very strange result, right? So I'm sort of picturing I'm picturing Dr. Shulkin in his office on Vermont Ave, and on the left side of his desk are the VBA files, and on the right side are the VHA files. And in the VHA drawer is something that says, I have epilepsy. I know that's not the facts of this case. And that's the reason that on the VBH or the benefit side, somebody had been denied. And we say in an opinion that the reason that the veteran loses this argument is that the veteran didn't come into the Secretary's office and move the file from the right-hand drawer to the left. Right? Because that's really what we're saying. These records did exist in VA, and we're really saying because the veteran didn't move them from one part of VA to another, the veteran loses. And that might be right legally, but that does seem really odd.
Your Honor, even if it does seem odd, the language of the regulation must control. The VA drafted this regulation. And I will note that it drafted it in 1961, which was at the time that VA drafted this regulation, there was no constructive notice. And this court discussed in Lynch v. Gober and in Damrell v. Brown that there was unequivocally no constructive notice doctrine of VA records prior to Bell. And the reasoning of those decisions was that VA is a large entity, and in order for it to administer benefits expeditiously and efficiently, it cannot be deemed to have notice of all records that it could potentially access.
So I was wondering about the regulatory history that 3.156B doesn't just apply to VA records, so it applies to anything that could be new and material evidence. So what do we do with that, right? Because if this just applied to VA records, then the language received would be truly a bizarre thing, as we've discussed. But, of course, that language makes much more sense with respect to the entire universe of records except for VA records.
Right.
So isn't that a little bit of indication that perhaps the word could be ambiguous in this regulation?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so. Certainly at the time that the regulation was drafted, VBA received VHA records in the same manner that it received all other records. So it didn't seem to treat VA records differently than other types of records. And again, the 3.156B is a veteran-friendly regulation in that it allows the veteran to, instead of filing a notice of disagreement within the one-year period and pursuing through the what could be a lengthy appeal period, it allows the veteran to submit new and material evidence within the 1 year and to have the regional office assess that evidence and potentially grant the claim faster than it would if he proceeded through the appeal process. So the veteran still always has the opportunity to file a notice of disagreement in which he could identify VA treatment records and VA would obtain those records, and the duty to assist would be ongoing through the adjudication to the board. However, the veteran did not file a notice of disagreement in this case.
Well, counsel, did the veteran ever, was there ever a point where you received the information regarding the PTSD and epilepsy medical report?
VA did obtain the VA treatment records in October 2007. So the records were obtained and they were considered in the October 2010 rating decision evaluating whether there was no material evidence, and they were in the record before the board. The board did not address those records. We do concede that those records are favorable and that the board should have addressed them. However, because the board did not address all the favorable evidence, it did not make the initial factual findings. In this case, the secretary contends that remand is the appropriate remedy for the board to make those findings in the first instance.
That's exactly the remedy you request from this court, is a remand to do what exactly?
A remand on the issue of whether new and material evidence has been presented so that the board can address favorable treatment records, which it did not address, including the records that were received in October 2007, but that are dated in June 2006, that discuss a potential relationship to appellant's PTSD, which has he has since subsequently received service connection for PTSD effective in 2014.
Counsel, could you address the appellant's discussion regarding VA's ability to access the CAPRI system in the manner that was described?
Yes, Your Honor. I did speak with someone about the CAPRI system. My understanding of the CAPRI system is that the regional office has the ability to look up a veteran and find whether he has been receiving VA treatment and to obtain those records. However, to assess whether any treatment records obtained during the one-year period would still be an onerous burden on the regional office, because it would have to essentially look through all of those records and determine whether they are new and material.
So could we, I mean, I hadn't thought about the CAPRI system until it was discussed today, but sort of in the electronic world, things are sort of everywhere, or they can be everywhere. If, in fact, a person sitting in the RO can, you know, click on their computer into the CAPRI system and see treatment and hit a button that says print records or send records, couldn't that be just receipt? I mean, it would sort of be like getting, it's true, if they didn't look, they wouldn't know they're there. Mm-hmm. But if I don't check my mailbox, that doesn't mean that a letter hasn't come, right? I had not thought about this electronic side of this before.
Your Honor, that shouldn't change the analysis of what received means, and that received still means that you're getting something from somewhere else. It's not something that you already have. So in that instance, when VA does print out those records, that would be when they are received under 3.156B, which is our position here, is that they were printed out in October 2007.
Do we know why they were printed in October 2007? Was there an event that precipitated that?
Yes, they were obtained after the appellant reopened a claim for PTSD. So once the appeal period had expired, he filed a claim to reopen. As the court discussed in Young versus Shinseki, the one-year appeal period, one can't file a claim to reopen while the claim is still pending. So the requirement is for the veteran to submit new and material evidence.
So, counsel, what exactly do you make of this continuing duty to assist in the context of 3.156B and 3.160 that discusses the status of claims?
Your Honor, again, if there is a duty to assist in that situation, it doesn't affect the claim here, because appellant is asking for the finality of the rating decision to be vitiated, and the Federal Circuit held in Cook versus Principe that a breach of the duty to assist does not vitiate finality. So that is an important distinction between these two issues.
Well, but, I mean, that was a Q claim, right? I mean, in other words.
Right.
But let me just get the Secretary's position on this. If that statement that the appellant directed us to, the statement that the person had written, okay, which came in during that period, right, mm-hmm. if that had come in before the decision was issued by the RO, it would seem that the Secretary's duty to assist would have been to get those records. Absolutely, right?
Your Honor, that wouldn't be under the duty to assist because the duty to assist requires that records be sufficiently identified. So with regard to the epilepsy claim, he did not, 3.156 C, or 3.159 C3 says that a claimant must provide enough information, including the condition for which treatment was provided. So here, he did not identify that the records were related to epilepsy. There would be, at the initial adjudication, Bell would apply and VA would have constructive notice of all VA records.
Right, but how does what you just described to me fit with Sullivan and the fact that we don't need to know anything about the records because they don't have to be relevant?
The holding in Sullivan did still state that the records have to be sufficiently identified, and so we would argue that 3.159C directs to how records must be sufficiently identified.
And so just on that point, your understanding of identified, is that identified in location or identified in content, or
the,
both?
3.159C does state the location, the time period, and the condition for treatment.
So is the RO decision on February 06 a finally adjudicated claim?
Yes, Your Honor.
At the time, though, as opposed to today, right? It's clearly final today unless it's vitiated, right? But at the time, in that one-year period, at least that's how I understood the Chief Judge's question.
In the one-year period, it was not a finally decided claim yet.
Was not.
It was not.
It wasn't final until March 2007.
Right. So the duty to assist would have continued throughout that period.
Your Honor, the 3.159C discusses the duty to assist upon the receipt of a substantially complete application, and it also discusses the duty to assist regard to a finally adjudicated claim. It does not clearly address this issue of within the one-year period after an adjudication, but before it has become final and before an appellant has filed an appeal.
And so in that period of time, this is the same question. It's not like I'm hiding an answer because I don't. But, I mean, in speaking to Ms. Odom, one way to look at it is from the beginning, the duty to assist just continues until a claim is over.
Right?
That's one way. Another way would be to say, as I think you just articulated, from the moment you file the substantially complete claim until the issuance of a decision, and then the duty to assist stops, and then it picks up again, say, with the filing of an NOD. Same question I asked Ms. Odom. Why should we pick one of those versions over another? Because we'd have to pick one or the other.
Your Honor, again, the practical realities of the system are that if the VA should be able to presume that the decision is going to be become final until the veteran makes some sort of action, whether it's filing in a notice of disagreement or submitting new and material evidence. Requiring that VA continue to obtain all VA treatment records within that one-year period essentially requires two adjudications, which is not workable. It essentially upends the finality of a significant portion of rating decisions, every rating decision in which the veteran is receiving VA treatment.
Counsel, I understand your point about, or at least your proposition that it requires two adjudications. We covered that before. But from a practical standpoint, what is really involved, and this picks up on Judge Beach's question, what really is involved in checking the CAPRI system? And again, I'll reiterate, if there are no new and material documents, you're not re-adjudicating, but we're checking to see what is in the system. What's involved in doing that? How long does it take? It's electronic.
Right.
It's not, it doesn't sound like to me it's that difficult, though I've never done it.
Your Honor, I see my time is getting low. If I
you may have 10 minutes, please, to counsel.
Thank
time.
You, Your Honor. It's not the burden in obtaining initially going in Capri and getting the records. It's the new and material assessment that is essentially a reassessment of the claim and requires the RO to look at all of those records to parse out which are related to a disability that could potentially be appealed and to compare that evidence to all the evidence that was in the record prior to the adjudication to determine if that evidence is cumulative and if it is material, if it relates to an unsubstantiated fact.
Okay, let's take this example. In this case, let's take a Capri search, if one had been done from February of 2006 until February of 2007, what would be in that search? What would you find?
Until February 2007? Right. Well, he did have records within that appeal period in this case.
Right.
Yes.
And so then the secretary would be on notice that something else is there, right?
No, Your Honor, because those records may not be relevant to the claim. And this is essentially requiring VA to make an assessment again.
But wouldn't that happen, you know, it's funny, this is again technology, right? Because that would have happened anytime somebody prints out their records. Right? So if everybody who had a VA treatment record and who had a pending claim that had an RO decision had been issued but the NOD hadn't been filed yet, and the Veteran Service groups just got together and say, print out your records and send them in, the VA would have to do this under 3.156B. They would have to make a determination about new material, right?
If they received the records. But again, that VA is on notice that in this particular case, the veteran has sent in records where the constructive notice issue makes this applicable in every case, and it's going to be a small percentage of the cases that the veteran actually is intending to submit new and material evidence. Your Honor,
I haven't thought this question out really well, but maybe you can help me along. It has to do with distinguishing this situation from Bell. So if we could just go back and say that this was a case the appellant wanted to correct the record or make the record complete and said, oh, by the way, while it's up here at the court, this record of my seeking treatment isn't in the record and I'd like to have it in the record. How would you respond then to that? Because Bell was a case where we were trying to get the record, it wasn't in the record before us.
I'm not sure that I'm understanding your question. In Bell, the issue was the record at the time of the board. So
okay.
Here, there is constructive notice of all VA records before the board. At the time of its adjudication. So here, VA did have those records. It's distinguishing between the record before the proceedings, which applies at the time of an adjudication, versus 3.156B, which applies during the time period after an adjudication.
So I'm trying to distinguish Bell is where I'm trying to get at.
Yes, Your Honor. So Bell interpreted 7252, which had broader language than 3.156B, and the Bell applies at the time of an initial adjudication. So when the RO initially makes its rating decision, it has constructive notice of all the records before it at that time, and then if the claim is appealed at the time of the board decision, it has constructive notice. Of course, it doesn't have constructive notice of records after, for example, a board decision. This court would not look at records that had been created after the time of a board decision. And the same analogy should apply here, and that after the initial adjudication, VA should not be deemed to have constructive notice of records at that time. I would just like to point to the VA manual provision that appellant cited and note that appellant takes that provision out of context.
Which provision are we referring to?
She was arguing that the VA manual requires that VA must always search CAPRI.
Right, but I want to know what provision we're talking about.
Is
C2 or C4 or exactly what? I just need the last two letters. Or last letter and number.
It's subpart 3, chapter 1, section C.
That's a big section.
Right. C2B.
Right, that's what I wanted to know.
States that when relevant treatment is alleged at a VA facility, ROs must attempt to obtain the records. So that only applies when relevant treatment is alleged at a VA facility. So,
but that, it seems to me, that statement is inconsistent with Sullivan, isn't it? Because it says that when relevant treatment records are available, and trust me, I'm with the Secretary that I know it's a strange rule that you have to get records that aren't necessarily relevant, but that is what Sullivan says. So that provision is not consistent with Sullivan anymore, is it?
Your Honor, regardless, the VA manual provision is not binding on the Secretary, as the Federal Circuit found in Disabled American Veterans versus the Secretary of Veteran Affairs. So,
but it was binding on the RO, right?
Yes, sir. It's not. It's guidance for the RO.
It's guidance for the RO? That's literally a question. But I had read the Federal Circuit to say that, or the Secretary's argument in the Federal Circuit was that the M21 is binding on the regional office adjudicators, but not on the board.
Whether or not it was binding and whether or not it's consistent to Sullivan, it was not implicated here because the veteran did not identify that he was getting relevant treatment to his epilepsy claim.
So what's your reading about that provision that you just had about whether, as I discussed with Ms. Odom, about whether that provision extends beyond the issuance of a decision in that one-year period?
I think the manual provision is intended to apply prior to the initial rating decision.
And I'm assuming there isn't anything in the manual itself about this issue?
No, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, the Secretary would ask that the court vacate the board's decision and remand the issue of whether new material evidence is presented so that the board can address all the favorable evidence of record. And again, the Secretary contends that the court need not address the constructive notice issue as that relates to an effective date, which is premature in this instance.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you. I have four main points I want to make in my 7 minutes. The first is that the counsel for the Secretary has pointed this court to subsection A of 3.156 to determine the meaning of subsection B. But if we're going to look at A, we also have to look at C. And C talks about documents being received or associated with the claims file. So that means that received has to mean something else than associate with the claims file. And so the Secretary's argument that it received in B means that the VA must go out and print these records and put them in the claims file in order for them to be received is inconsistent with the language of the regulation itself. Second, contrary to the Secretary's argument, the Bell Doctrine isn't limited to 7252. Attached to the Secretary's supplemental briefing is a general counsel opinion where the general counsel himself has said that it applies to determinations of clear and unmistakable error under 3.105. And also, we pointed out in our supplemental brief, this court has applied the doctrine of constructive possession to 3.156A. That's the Dunn and the Evans case. And 3.105 doesn't have any mention of the record, the term the record. So the argument that the doctrine applies only to 72 and 52 is inconsistent with the agency's own interpretation of 3.156A. Also, want to point out that Voracek is not dispositive here. Voracek is a case about what is new and material, not when something is received. And even in the concurrence in that case, the Federal Circuit concurring judge talked about how really what should have happened was that they should have gone and went and got the records, the VA treatment records, and determined whether those were new and material before they did under the 3.156B analysis.
I should know this, but I don't remember it in that concurrence. What was the basis for saying that? Because I was going to ask you that, right? Because in the world of a where the duty to assist applied in full blossom, you would have to go get the records, right? Was that his logic, that because the statement identified records, they had to go?
Yeah, the judge noted that they didn't, that the VA did not comply with its duty to assist right away when it received that notice, and therefore they should have been looked at before the determination as to whether the finality was vitiated under 3.156C was made. Secondly, counsel for the Secretary talked a lot to this court about the burden that would be associated with the rule today that the doctrine of constructive possession or constructive possession applies. And I found it remarkable that the discussion really related on the burden that would be actually determining the materiality of the records, not the burden and those records being deemed received. And that's the question before the case today. Not whether the records are new and material. Counsel all but conceded that. It's whether the records were received. And there's no argument that the looking at Capri and determining whether the records were received is the burden. It's counsel's argument that it's determining whether they're new and material, which is the burden, but that's exactly what's required by the regulation.
Yeah, but to be fair, I think her argument was that in the regulation without constructive receipt, something else has to happen. So there's going to be a subset of records that you'll look at. If this argument is correct, then anybody who's receiving VA treatment during that one-year period, they would have to have those records assessed. I mean, at least that's how I understood it. It's a volume issue, not a task issue.
Well, even so, the Secretary's argument then is it's totally in VA's ball, VA's court. The ball is totally in VA's court to get these records, and it could happen as it happened here, where the veteran made the VA aware of the existence of these records, and VA didn't go out and get them until a year and a half later, way outside the one-year period under 3.156B. That's an absurd result that it's in VA's, the ball is in VA's court to go get these records, but the VA can take as long as they want to get the records, and then it's the veteran's fault for not actually printing them out and giving them their own records. Further, I would note that the Secretary's interpretation of 3.159, that he would have had to have, Mr. Turner would have had to have said that he was getting treatment for epilepsy, is actually inconsistent with the language of the regulation at 3.159C2i. Obtaining records in the custody of a federal department of agents or agency, which includes explicitly VA treatment records, the regulation says clearly that this information as to the condition for which treatment was provided is only required if the VA requests it. VA never requested any additional information from Mr. Turner to this in this case about what the records in 2006 related to. I would also point out that perhaps I misheard her, but I think in terms of making determining whether the duty to assist applies after the initial rating decision, it seemed that the Secretary provided an inconsistent position. At first, she said, counsel said, yes, so long as we get information that is relevant, or as long as we get information about these outstanding records. And then towards the end said, no, unless that there's information about relevant records. And so I think that speaks volumes as to whether the duty to assist should apply after the rating decision. VA doesn't even seem to have a clear position on that matter. And I would like to point out to Judge Allen that I disagree that Sullivan is a strange case. The reason why is because, first of all, it was based on the plain language of VA's own regulation. And it makes sense, right? Why should there be this extra burden or extra showing that a claimant has to make about VA's own records that VA has in its own system in order for the VA to associate them or look at them as part of a claim?
Well, and luckily for you, the Federal Circuit can erase by thinking it's strange, so you're safe there.
And finally, just in terms of whether this is a downstream issue or not, it's not. The requirement of new and material evidence is a very important jurisdictional bar for the agency to get to the merits of the decision, including providing a VA medical examination of the duty to assist. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be submitted for consideration. The court will now come down and greet counsel, as is our custom.